Hey folks, how's it going? And welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm your host today, Austin Williams. We got a really cool one for you. I had the pleasure and enjoyment of returning back to Splice Institute this past summer, and it was their 10th anniversary of the Institute being in existence. And I decided to do a big spread on it. So I grabbed a bunch of interviews with a variety of instructors and faculty for the festival to kind of talk about a little bit of the history, but also focusing on this year, the 10th year, and some of the special stuff that was going on. We had some lovely chats with the guest artists such as Sam Pluta, Paula Mathewson, and along with all the regular Splice gang. So I was very excited to do this. This institute means a lot to me as a composer and creator. I think what they're doing at this organization and with this organization is truly, it's pretty unique. We touch on it a bit. You know, you have your typical electroacoustic festivals, you have your Seamus, your EMMs, which are great and fantastic in their own right. But what I think Splice gets right and what they really emphasize, and you'll hear in a lot of the interviews, is these the sense of community that they implement. Community and education. It's very pedagogically focused, and it's really meant for anybody to kind of break down the barrier that is seemingly created through this medium, because it is a niche field and rather esoteric, but I think all of the individuals that curate it and are part of it understand that it really can be accessed by anybody if it's taught and curated in the correct way. So without further rambling, let's jump right into it. And I can't wait for you all to listen to these interviews. Cool.
Hi, I'm Christopher Biggs. I am the director of Splice Institute, and I've been in that role more or less since the founding 10 years ago, and I assumed that role at the point at which we got formal positions. Mm-hmm. Splice Institute's hosted at Western Michigan University, and I teach there, so I'm often on the ground, logistics and things like that.
Yeah, great.
I'm Eleni Lilios. I am the Director of Composition Activities for Splice Institute. I'm also on the Splice Board, and I have been with the Splice team since the beginning, yeah. Although not always on staff.
Yeah.
I started on staff in the second year of yeah. Splice Institute.
So yeah, let's bring it back to where it all started. I talked to Keith a little bit about this, but you know, there's always more to the story. So maybe let's talk about the first year, and then how, not, we don't have to go chronologically, but maybe how it's evolved over time. And could you ever imagine it kind of being this entity that it is now? You know,
that's a very interesting question. So I think when we started 10 years ago, there was a lot of concern about whether or not there would be interest.
Yeah.
And interest in kind of what we were attempting to do, and maybe in, did we have the right people mm-hmm. involved to garner interest?
Yeah.
And I think the trajectory has been more successful than I think I imagined. I thought we'd always be flying by the seat of our pants. Mm-hmm. And we're flying by the seat of our pants yeah. in that we yeah. we're organized. We don't have enough people to do the amount of work that we've generated by yeah. trying to do so much stuff.
Yeah.
But in terms of the institute specifically, like, the interest is high. The participants are amazing every year, mm-hmm. and it's been more successful than I think I predicted.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, looking back to the first year I was the guest composer.
Sure.
And it was just, the vibe was really great. There weren't, how many participants did we have? 18? It was very small.
It was more like 30-something.
Oh, was it 30? It seemed very small.
Half the current yeah. cohort, basically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. More yeah. than that, right? So, okay, 30. Thank you. So, at the end of the week, I remember thinking, this was such an amazing week. I really would love to be part of this team. Mm-hmm. And I had dropped little hints to Chris and Keith throughout the week, like, you know, if you need to expand, or if you, you know. Yeah. And I remember we were walking back from Dalton to somewhere else, and they said, well, Eleni, do you think you'd like to join our team? Yes! Yeah. because I think the idea is such a good one. The community is so vibrant. It's great to get together and yeah. see young people, even just to, as an observer, right? To see how Chris and Keith and the rest of the team have created over the years an environment that encourages people to be creative and openly creative without judgment and to help those young folks express themselves creatively, learn more about technology, but also then collaborate with each other and build their own relationships, just like those of us who are on the board. We have built our relationships together over the years. Yeah. So it's great.
I always, last year was my first year, but I described it, it's like a week-long hang, basically. You know, you really get to know everybody here, including the faculty, you know, there's no invisible line between, you know, participant and faculty. It's all very like cohesive and collaborative, and there's a really great community that goes on here, and you get to, like you said, meet some like really phenomenal people, and it's great.
Excellent.
So a large part of Splice is the educational, the pedagogical aspect of it, which I think is really cool, because we work with stuff that isn't inherently known. You know, this really niche kind of style of music that is really fascinating and interesting, but we're all like really attracted to for one reason or another. I would imagine that was probably the goal from the beginning, to have like a pedagogical, you know, influence on that, but can you talk about that a bit more?
Yeah, I think our vision was extremely clear. We weren't sure how much interest there would be to go back to the other answer. But our vision from the beginning was, you have composers, undergrad, grad, who've never really had a strong education in music technology, either in production or just how like microphones and everything should be hooked up and all those kind of elements. And then they're doing this thing, and they're going around and they're having pieces played and things like that. And it's not at a level that like I think music production standards are society-wide within the academic institution, but we're calling ourselves composers, and many of us end up doing technology.
Right.
And I had no strong technological education.
Okay.
So it was like, okay, well, we've all had to learn these things along the way, and there's this need within the community of people in music schools who are interested in this stuff to get a more technical and clear education as to how these technical things would work with instruments and live electronics and performance.
Thank you.
Sam Wells. I'm the trumpet player in Splice Ensemble. I'm also a composer, multimedia artist, and I teach music technology at Temple University in Philly.
Great.
And I am Adam Vidixis, and I'm the drummer in Splice Ensemble, and I'm also a composer, improviser, and multimedia artist that is a professor at Temple University.
So what came first, the ensemble or the organization?
The organization.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the group formed kind of as initially as like the house band of the performing faculty.
Yeah.
And we all kind of came, we knew each other before, some of us better than others, but like in that first year, we're like, oh, yeah, this is fun. Like,
yeah,
it's fun, fun playing with you all. And we kind of, it grew from that, started growing from that.
So it was not a necessity, but it just like, it felt good. You just kept it going. And you know, that
I don't want to just do this one week a year.
Let's
keep this.
It's
rolling.
Very, very much the we had a chance to play a little bit of chamber music together, and it was like this feels really good, like right away. So we wanted to keep that up.
So how did because I know it started with Keith and Chris, and then how did you guys get connected with the organization?
So like they basically Keith and Chris, we all you know like knew each other from like the conference scene and playing shows and festivals and everything. And yeah, it was basically, you know, they kind of put together a faculty list, you know, and then, you know, we got in, you know, asked.
Great. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, so this is my second year here, and I've watched concerts previously, kind of seen you guys do just a wide variety of things throughout the years. And, you know, I applaud you on, you know, keeping this going for 10 years. And it's, you know, it's really cool to see, something of this, you know, caliber, just like really hold on and continue to grow even through a global pandemic and like all these other like things that I'm sure you've gone through. I asked Keith like what maybe some memorable moments or what was like something that you guys remember that you maybe want to talk about over the years, which is a big question, I understand, but you know, if something comes to mind.
There are a lot of good memories.
Yeah.
To think for a second.
So some of the things I'll say that also, and it relates to wanting to play together and also work, like that the founding faculty that have now become the like organizers.
Yeah.
You know, and that those roles are always shifting of who's like taking on, you know, leadership and administration and, you know, and kind of cycling through. And like to commit to that group of people for 10 years, you know, it's kind of like this like group marriage. I mean, it's so much work. We're together all year planning things or whatever, and then we're playing together in ensemble. But what sticks out to me is like how much everyone respects each other artistically, of course, all that, but like literally belly laughing with these people all the time. Like where you can't stop and your eyes are tearing and you're just like, I need to catch my breath. Like that's the vibe. That's why I think it's so... It has all the other things, of course. Like you can't, you know, like we love each other's music and we love working with each other. We love playing with each other's artists.
Yeah.
But then there's also this like family. You know what I mean? It's just like we truly all love each other and it's so much fun.
Good.
That I think that is the secret sauce. You know, in some ways. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, we joke a little bit about Splice Ensemble. If we weren't spending so much time together already, like doing work and tour and stuff, that we'd probably just take vacations together.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, why not? I don't know. Yeah, it really seems like it's, like you said, it's coming from this place of like love, but also like respect and like understanding everybody else's craft and like what they can bring to the table. I think last year when the theme was like improvisation and I think you guys did a couple sets, and I did at least one concert that was like entirely improvised. Mm-hmm. And like watching the communication and everything happen on stage, it is just so clear to me that everybody respected each other and knew what everybody brought to the table, and then supported that and knew how to like lift.
Thank you.
it happens in a lot of different musical contexts, but particularly with Splice Ensemble, mm-hmm. there's a lot of artistic trust, like when we're on stage.
Sure.
I don't worry about Keith or Adam catching me or following me or me following them. I know how quickly they are going to respond and yeah. like they're like going to be dialed in.
Yeah.
So it feels really natural and comfortable to just be on stage and like we can all jump in together. We know
yeah.
we're going to go somewhere and adapt. And,
right.
And I think that comes from a variety of things. One, we just love playing together, love spending time together, but also kind of early on in Splice when we're trying to figure out the ensemble and the instrumentation, particularly with percussion, because percussion could be literally any instrument ever.
Right.
And we were playing a lot of like really hard music of different instrumentations.
Yeah.
Not even talking about like, logistics, but musically that is like a different scenario, jumping from one to another, mm-hmm. that we really kind of forged a lot of skills to musically communicate
yeah.
and artistically collaborate that I think have really served us well now as we've kind of more dialed into what our aesthetic and sound is.
Sure. I mean, like, I'd be interested to like kind of go through the years and see how things have maybe changed, but I mean, what's... And I don't know if you guys have an answer for this, but what would you say is like the biggest change between when you first started playing together and maybe like currently?
I definitely think the biggest thing, because it's both a sonic and logistical thing, is what Sam mentioned, which yeah. includes both the two biggest logistical nightmares in our group, which is percussion and electronics.
Yeah.
Right? Like those two yeah. things are, you know, the huge things to be managed.
Well, and a piano.
yeah, well, I don't mean like, I just, yeah. like the piano's there and,
yeah.
and
it's, yeah.
you know, you put two mics on it. And that,
right.
That, logistically, that's what it is.
Sure.
But like what Sam was saying in the beginning, we just said, oh, yeah, because I'm, you know, I play, you know, like to like most classically trained percussionists, like all the stuff.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, composers, like, what do you want? They'd be like, oh, we're going to have this, that, and the other thing. And we'd say, okay, the next composer we're working with, what do you want? And it was like this, that, and the other thing. And it's like, there would be Sam with the standing with the trumpet, mm-hmm. Keith on the piano, and then the whole rest of the stage was just these different multi-percussion
giant things, setups.
It was like seven marimbas on stage. It was just like...
It felt like it, but yeah. it was close. You know, and it's just... And then I can't stand in the same spot, right? Because we don't
right.
want to strike in between every single thing.
Right.
And then we also have all of these different electronic setups, and it's like, man, how many mics do we need? How many... Like, you know, it was like... Because yeah. we were just kind of letting everything go, or whatever people wanted to do,
right.
we tried to accommodate. Which, you know, in some ways that's great if you're going to play just the one piece.
Right.
But if you're doing a full concert and you don't want the audience waiting 15 minutes between each thing,
yeah.
we really had to decide, well, what are we going to do about
yeah.
this? You know, how are we going to make this happen? And so really, really starting to define... this is what it is for the percussion stuff,
mm-hmm.
and this is what it is for the electronic stuff,
mm-hmm.
and you kind of need to work within those parameters
yeah.
so that the show can flow.
Yeah,
that worked well, and it was also the opportunity for me. I felt for a long time, you know, that the drum set is, despite being like probably the most ubiquitous percussion instrument, like generally,
yeah.
if you think about most people's experience with music, you know, in because of pop music and its prevalence there and jazz and these other things, I was like, it's so underrepresented, unutilized within the idioms that we typically play.
Yeah.
And I just love playing drum set and have been improvising on drum set.
Yeah.
And I knew the capabilities and I really wanted to be a part of developing repertoire for that instrument.
Yeah.
And then it also allowed the situation where it's like, we didn't want to always play in just academic spaces.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like you could play at a club or a bar and whatever, mm-hmm. and they're probably going to have, you know, a drum set.
Sure.
A portable thing, too. I mean, relatively portable.
Right. So you started to codify, like, the instrumentation, and I guess that would probably go for the electronics as well. I mean, that's a bit more flexible, but...
We're... it's flexible on the computer side, but we have a very kind of strict... This is why you can have inputs into the computer. This
yep.
is why you can have outputs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We have kind of a range of different miking setups we do, but yep. they all will mix down to, we say, like, your patch should have three inputs. You can send stereo out.
Yep.
And that's what we do.
Yeah.
It's not the only thing we could do, but when we did that and codified our, like, acoustic instrumentation,
mm-hmm.
it allowed us to actually spend our time focus on developing a cohesive group sound
yeah.
as opposed to... just making work whatever the composition in front of us was.
Yeah, I mean, if you're always battling logistical issues, you're
yeah.
barely getting into the music. So no, yeah. it's really smart yeah. to, you know, kind of yeah, to throw those limitations on there. You know, otherwise you're just banging your head against a wall.
Yeah.
Great. I mean, you guys are fantastic and obviously like an integral part of this whole, like, the Splice Institute and everything. And it's, I think it's really cool that we have people that are teaching. Sam does lovely, classes in synthesis and Max. And then, and then I see you perform at the end of the night. And mm-hmm. so you kind of see like the through line of like, oh, like, you know, this is like something they're teaching. And then you see the implementation of it. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really impactful, aspect of, Splice in general, is you really start to see that everything being put into practice. Great. It's not just theory. There is an actual practice going on here. Yeah. Great. Well, I you know, congratulations again on
thank you
10 years of doing this. I hope there's 10 more, you know.
Yeah,
and then 10 more after that, you know. Thank you.
Paula Mathewson. I'm like so many of your guests, a composer, performer, improviser, sound artist, sound nerd.
Yes.
And it's great to be here. It's great to be back here, I have to say, specifically, because it's wonderful to be part of Splice's celebration of 10 years, which is such an achievement. And it is a testament to the community that people are coming back. And that there's this wide celebration of quite a range of work.
So when was the first year you were here, and were you here as an artist, a featured artist then as well?
Yes. I cannot remember what year it was. It was probably 2015 or 16.
Okay, yeah, so about almost 10 years ago, bridging on a decade, I guess.
Let's say eight.
Eight, okay.
Splice is 10.
That's right. Can't steal its thunder. Excellent. Well, so I've learned a lot about your medium and what you work on and how you work. And it's very tactile and hands-on, and I really like that aspect about your music and your projects and everything you're creating. The large-scale project that you've presented here, I'm going to, of course, let you explain it and go and please go into as much or as little detail as you want to about it, because you did give a full hour-long, you know, explanation and a lovely presentation about the entire project, which I'm sure is still available online in some capacity. People can check it out, but please, I would love to hear, you know, you talk about it maybe a little bit more, kind of in the context of... you talked about the piece, but I'm curious, like, your relationship, what made you think of the Splice Ensemble when you went with the project or wanted to go ahead with it?
Right. Well, so the project is in reference to this long-term developing research and sound-based exploration of Mammoth Cave.
Yeah.
And to sort of have a wide embrace of that and sort of very slow development. Specifically, it's looking at the intersections and engagements with sound in Mammoth Cave as that's manifested through human interaction with it, non-human interaction with it, as well as how that really has some sort of really gnarly parts of history embedded in it as well, and how that overlays with the history of tourism in part, and also... how that relates to a lot of preconceptions and sort of things that people bring to a space versus then trying to think about, like, well, what does the space want? And then really just trying to be deliberately very slow with it. So it's actually very hard to talk about for that reason, which is why the presentation was an hour long. And the fun thing about exploring it with sound is that it allows contradictions to sort of hang out a little bit and abrade each other in a sort of fruitful way, or sometimes just... simply coexist.
Yeah.
And so the project for me began closer to 2013, which was when I first went to Mammoth Cave and started to learn about its history. And then, so by the time that I started working with Splice through the Institute and through being out in the world, they sort of proposed, like, oh, well, we'd sort of like to do some sort of project with you. And I was like, well, that's awesome. And so I said, well, I don't know if you're interested, but I've been doing this really slow burn project with Mammoth Cave. And they were like, oh, that sounds great. So
that's a beautiful relationship that's clearly, like, lasted so long, right? And has continued to be fruitful and great. What I really was attracted to about this project and this piece was the... I think you said in the presentation, I asked, like, what point did you realize that this project, like, doesn't have an end, or, like, you don't want it to end, kind of thing? And, or I think your response was, like, you hope it never ends. Like, it's one of these ongoing things. And maybe, I don't know, I think it was just a beautiful sentiment. Maybe you can speak on that a bit more.
Well, it's been informative to go there without an end goal or product in mind. And that's partly, too, is just, like, to have, because I always learn more when I go And there's a lot about relationships there and developing the relationship with the cave, with the people around the cave, the ecosystem around the cave. Like,
yeah.
And it reaches back really far, too.
Yeah.
And so part of it is, just to be clear, I'm a guest there, right?
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things of, like, my experience is going to be very different and is going to be bounded by the fact that I don't have the experience of growing up next to it, having mm-hmm. that time, you know. And so, like, and so part of the slowness is inherent in really having the conversations, doing the research, things like that. And I, yeah. it's just always learning more.
Sure, sure.
And then being, so like, you know, with Splice, you know, with it being Sam Wiles on Vidixis, Keith Kirchhoff, and then Jennifer Beatty, who's joining us as mezzo-soprano.
Of course, yeah.
And then working very closely with Bryce Leach, too, whose knowledge of the cave, and he's part of the National Park
right.
System, right? Like, he's part of Mammoth Cave as a biologist.
Yeah. I really wanted to, I couldn't find the time to talk to him. I really wanted to, like, I wanted to get him on here and pick his brain, but Bryce was such a lovely addition to have here this week to just, I don't know, he was a lovely human, and then also just like,
yes,
you know, all these just depth of knowledge about
yes,
this topic
absolutely.
Is absolutely insane, you know.
Thank you.
also running a feedback workshop, and maybe talk about that a little bit. And maybe I'm not in it, so I'm genuinely just what are you doing in there? What's the class about?
Oh well, feedback.
Yeah.
Ta-da! That's been super fun because the participants in it too have like because there's so many different ways to manifest feedback.
Yeah,
right? And
for
so
sure.
This part been fun is to learn from the participants in terms of the ways that they're already thinking and working with it.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, for sure.
I always like to quote Daniel Fishkin because he who makes beautiful work, and one of the things that he said was like, feedback is like the real Promethean kind of thing of electronic music.
Got it. Okay. Yeah.
And so there's all these seminal works from like early experimental music, right? Like that involves it in some sort of level because it's highly contingent to the sort of space and the process, right?
Yeah.
Like, but it also is like just very quick and immediate.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, thanks to you know, like a lot of the work that we were sort of talking about too, some of the historical works, right, were like by Alvin Lucier, of course, who has had a big impact on so many people, including myself.
Sure.
And then talking about some of the classics like Pendulum Music by Steve Reich, right?
Yeah,
But then going much more contemporary with that too, and looking at some of the work that Cecilia Lopez, for example, is mm-hmm. doing mm-hmm. with Red, which is both instrument sculpture and like very beautiful sort of elaborate system that keeps building.
Sure, sure.
And so, and then also talking about circuit-based feedback, right? Like, and so again, just really, really fun. But then, like things that sort of like talking about the power of recursive systems because of what they reveal about the mechanisms of how things are working.
Right.
And so, I was able to reach out to a good friend and frequent collaborator, Philip White, too, in terms of like talking about like, okay, wait, there's this phenomenon that happens, and what does that mean exactly?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Because someone had asked about it in class, and it was just. Like,
oh, okay. Yeah.
Kind of being like, oh, right. Like, that's a thing. But, you know, and it's one of the things that's like the vibe is really good because people have been really generous with offering what their, you know, what their different sort of super secret powers are.
Okay. Don't worry, Joanne. You're good. I mean, I love that idea. It is this like beast you kind of have to wrangle down, right? Because it can get real gnarly real quick. But once you can kind of figure out the parameters that you're working with, it's super powerful and like really compelling to use in a variety of ways, of course. So that's cool. I would have loved to take it. We were talking before this. You know, you gotta pick your dessert here because there's just like a lot of different opportunities and different.
So what do you think the vegetables are?
Yeah, yeah. probably the classes, the gen class that I'm taking at 9 a.m. that I'm still like.
Oh, that's really great.
It is, though. You know, like I've had, so this is my second year here, and it like it's always so good to reconnect with people, obviously, mm-hmm. but then also just see what people are up to, you know. I know Sam Wells like really got into phasers this past year, and he did a whole, you know, class on it, and it was awesome. It was really cool to learn what, like, how his brain's been thinking about stuff. So, you know, yeah. Well, thank you for sharing everything. Is there anything else you want to push out into the universe before we call it here?
Really, that I would, you know, just say the gratitude for the Institute, for the festival, that like there's something really powerful and beautiful about bringing people together. And that people get to make together and share knowledge, and that those two things are actually, it's not just about performing for each other, it's about sharing resources, tools, time, energy.
Totally.
And that the people who have been doing this now burning hard for 10 years, that we can take a moment to sort of celebrate that. Because it doesn't happen in a vacuum, and it doesn't happen without persistence and continual effort just bit by bit. And so we get to enjoy the fruits of it this week.
Yeah.
But also know that it extends far back and hopefully projects into the future as well.
Yeah. That's all the time we have today for part one. Look out next week for part two. We have a number of other interviews and features of different pieces. Just
heads up, you know, a lot of these pieces are from past Splice festivals. Unfortunately, they take some time mastering the music from the current year, as they should. So I wasn't quite able to get that in time. But some of these are from the past Splice and just other works that these composers have featured. So I figured that everyone can enjoy that and would incentivize people to look out for the final product in the future. So with that being said, Relevant Tones is a product of Access Contemporary Music. Find out more at acmusic.org, and we'll catch you guys next week. Thanks.